Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub. I have the privilege and honor of talking with Mickey Kennedy. He is the founder and president of E-Releases, which opened about 24 years ago. His company helps businesses, authors, startups, etc., increase visibility and credibility through press releases and distribution. One of the reasons I wanted to talk with him is because I know nothing about this field. Those who claim to be the wise men are sure the fool. I don't know everything, and I don't want to know everything. And when I read about him and I went to his website and did a little research, he doesn't talk some kind of lingo that I can't understand. He talks regular speak, because a lot of the stuff can go right. You know, if you get into anybody's profession, you can start talking, you know, acronyms and all. I mean, I'm an engineer. I used to be an engineer in the medical field. There was pages of acronyms. I hated acronyms. Tell me what you're talking about. So he does this through all the stuff, his distribution and press releases. Mickey has editors that work for him, not salespeople, which I like. And he really focuses on that, because when you get a call, you don't want to be pitched. I don't like being pitched. Nobody likes being pitched and talked to. They talk to people. He also has an MFA. What is that degree?
A Master's of Fine Arts.
Okay, cool. In creative writing and poetry. I thought that was very cool. From George Mason University. And I guess there's something I was reading. I guess you still kind of get with your friends and stuff in virtual events and write stuff and talk about it. That's fun. I like that, and keeps it up. It keeps that creativity going. So I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Well, you're very welcome. Glad to be here.
Thank you. What was the coincidence, the serendipity, the accident? What was that thing that happened to you in your, I mean, you just didn't wake up one morning and said, I'm going to become a PR guy, I'm going to do e-releases. What was that kind of, I'm sure there's a lot of things, but what was that serendipity, that accident that kind of guided you in that direction going, hey, keeps pushing me that way. I think I'll go down that road.
Right. For me, my game plan was to be a waiter and write poetry in the evenings. And I just thought it was going to be like the best sort of bohemian life. And I did it for a summer after graduating with my MFA. And my ankles hurt, my knees hurt, my back hurt, and my mind was just zapped, you know, from a 12-hour shift on concrete. Yeah. So yeah. I decided I needed a safe office job. And I got hired at a telecom research startup as employee number three. And they said, hey, you're the writer, even though it's creative writing, figure out press releases and send them out for us. And so I did that. And I got really good at it, you know, sort of figuring out creatively what journalists are wanting. They're wanting stories. You know, we publish numbers, but behind the numbers are stories and little anomalies. And I would flesh out what those anomalies were and what they meant. And I would bring them to the media, and the media just responded. We would get picked up in The Economist, Financial Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal. And I was just like, this is easy. Why aren't other small businesses doing this? And that's sort of where I sort of bumbled into deciding I wanted to help businesses and started e-releases.
So how long did you work for them before you started the business?
I was working for them, I think a total of 3 years. And the owner of the company, who was also an entrepreneur, I mentioned the idea to him, and he said, you should run with that. So I spent about a year still working there, contacting journalists in the evening and weekends, just asking if I could send them press releases via email. And most of them said yes, and I launched with 10,000 journalists. So about 3 years after being there, I was fully doing e-releases only.
Wow, what a great mentor type person. I mean, to be able to say, that's a great idea. You don't really come across people like that. You guys still talk?
Not as much as I'd like. It's been a couple of years since we last spoke. He's sort of retired from being a telecom attorney and sold the business. So we don't stay in touch. But
that's still very cool. I love those kind of stories, because when you have somebody that wants to, whether you call it a mentorship or a partnership or something, whatever word you want to use, somebody that say, hey, don't worry about it. I think that's a great idea. I think I would run with it. When you have those are little serendipities, accidents, and coincidences that I was mentioning that kind of go down that. You were mentioning about stories. So you were attracted more to people's individual stories of where they came from?
Well, there would be like things like all Caribbean countries have similar traffic to and from the US except for one. I can't recall what it is now, but it was like six times what all the others were. Oh. And they're like, what's that? And then I look into it and it's like, it was the 1-900 center for North America. And so horoscopes and adult phone numbers would lead you there. And so I think the Wall Street Journal loved that one and did an article about it. So we would just look at things and just try to flesh out why is this anomaly happening? And is there a story behind it? And there often was.
That's very cool. I do like that type of stuff because you don't know where things begin. You don't even know why they begin where they're at. They just, they just pop up for whatever reason. And yeah, there is stories all over the US, all over the world. So what I want to ask you, because I don't know anything about this. And I know my audience does not. And that's, again, why I wanted to find out how you consciously communicate with your PR. What is a press release and how does it work? Because I really don't have a clue.
Right. A press release is just a third party written in the third person announcement to the media. Sticks to the facts, the who, what, when, where, why, and how of what you're announcing. And it's not what is going to be published in a newspaper or a magazine, but it gives the basic facts so that a journalist can write such an article. And they're generally between 400 to 600 words. They can be longer. They can certainly be shorter. And you really just want to tantalize them with an engaging headline and opening paragraph of what it is, the pitch is. What's the most important thing that you're announcing today? Why is it relevant to a journalist? And there might be a quote in there, usually you and writing in the first person. Then it's, you know, most of the quotes that I get are safe. They look like they've been written as an afterthought. And it's really a lost opportunity because that's the place where you can really shine. If your announcement is mediocre, you know, journalists have to write articles about mediocre press releases. But if you have an outstanding quote in a mediocre press release, you're going to rise above everybody else that's got a mediocre press release. So you want to say something that's succinct or concise, powerful. Sometimes it can be contrarian, but, you know, something that just, if a journalist paraphrased it into their own words, there'd be a loss of the power or the authority of the speaking. And so that's a place where I feel that you really should shine. And usually there's an about section or what we call a boilerplate towards the end of the release that gets recycled and used in all the subsequent press releases. You certainly can include links, and you should, and you certainly should include photos or images. And just realize that it doesn't have to be a very professional image. Journalists really love candid shots, like a customer using your product or service, or just you. You know, it doesn't have to be like a glamour or professional shot. And really, the ones that work best are those that are candids.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I don't know. I mean, you can get free pictures everywhere, but having that knowledge to be able to place it in there and then do the right, I'm not a photo guy. I could do something tiny for myself, but I can't do those type of things. So when I write things, it's different, because somebody, a professional writer like yourself and your team, they're going to say, okay, I got it, but it's either repeating itself, it's too many ands or buts or there, you know, that type of typical grammar things that everybody makes mistakes on. I mean, I better at what it used to be, but that's not my place to be. So when they go to you, you kind of straighten that out and have it real succinct. In when I'm doing some more seminars, and some of the places that I'm going to said, well, we need something more with one line. You know, I'm like, oh, and different things that have happened to me that I'm working now with other people since the philosophies have been moving forward in this podcast, it's a little easier because I'm getting people are writing things and I'm going, oh, that's better than what I said. So you did it. And a quote, it's an excellent idea and an excellent comment, actually, is because that quote is coming from your heart. That's coming from what you find your inner knowing and what you are trusting in yourself. And I love that concept. So conscious community audience, be real. Be real. Something I'm really taking away with this is, I'm just going to talk to the audience for a second. You know, it's like, be real. Don't be, as my kids used to say when they were little, don't be fakey. Come from the gut. Come from the ajinoi, the soul knowledge. Come from who you are. Come from the inner knowing. And when it comes out from you, even if it's just three or four words, you know, Mickey and his team can look at this if you want to do this, and they can expand on their, say, hey, that's good enough. Because if it's really coming from there, people will get it right away. That's a good point. So how can you write a winning press release? That's a great question coming from what we're just talking about, because I have no clue. So do I give you, like, when you say, hey, I'm going to work with you, Mickey, I'm going to work with your team, what do you want from me? What kind of information do I give you so you can kind of shape that into something that's worthwhile?
Right. So generally, most people come to us with a milestone that they've accomplished or they're looking forward to, like maybe they've won an award, or they're going to be speaking at a conference, or they've announced a new product or service, lots of different milestones. And generally, the types of things we like to know are, you know, tell us about the product, tell us about you and the company. You know, a lot of people sort of discount the unique selling proposition. What is it that makes you different from everybody else? What's your uniqueness? And sometimes that includes your story, like who you are, or how you came to the business, or how this product came to light. You know, we work with a lot of people that appear on Shark Tank. And the one thing I've noticed about most startups is they're really good about letting you know what their elevator pitch is, who they are, and what they're doing that's really different than everyone else. And so I really think that's a valuable lesson to take. If you don't have what you feel is the unique selling proposition in your business, you really should try to create one, because after a while, you'll just realize you're a commodity and you're going to be competing solely on price. And that always leads down to zero. So you really want to sort of maximize your opportunities. And journalists love stories. They're storytellers. And so anything that you can do to build out a story by including your own story, be it inspirational or overcoming objections or obstacles, or just sharing a vulnerability, it could even be a personal health issue that you had along the way of starting your business. These are all things that humanize you and tell a personal story. And those are the things that reach people in really good articles. And journalists love having those to be able to build a story on.
So one of the questions I had, because you're mentioning journalists. So you write these, you have a relationship with these, a lot of journalists. And one of the things I did some research on you, it said that it can go into, you know, Inc. magazine or all these other things. So if you send out something from me, say, and you send it out, you obviously know which particular journalists, because not everybody's going to want it. Everybody's got their niche, right? So
right.
You send it to them. How does that go, like, percentage-wise? If you say you send it to 10, do all 10 say, cool, I'm going to use it? Or is it kind of, how does that work?
Right. So most of our distribution is over a newswire. And in the U.S., there's 3 newswire press releases that basically allow a platform for journalists to log in and look at their industry feed and actually even customize it. So they can restrict certain releases based on keywords or make sure that they include ones. So it makes it a very useful tool for a busy journalist skimming potential story ideas. And so what happens with that is you hit send, it goes to this place, it gets routed by industry location, because there are people who are only interested in the local market. That gets categorized. There's national journalists and magazines, as well as trade publications, and you select your proper industries when you schedule distribution, and then it goes out. You know, most people get zero pickup. You know, that's one of the honest things about press releases. Most people get zero pickup because most people are doing the same press release they see everybody else doing. There's a new,
a new widget.
New VP of HR. And so we just hired someone new, so we need to do a press release. And it's not an industry veteran. It's not a new CEO. Someone in the C-suite. So it's really not very strategic or important. You know, we also get a lot of product launch press releases that are written with what I call the, you know, what's in it for me approach, where everything is self-centered. It's, we want to sell this product. So here we are talking about the product, and here's a list of features. But what's missing there is, if you heard me say anything, it's journalists like stories. And there's no story there. And, you know, one of the easiest things you can do is you can plug in a use case study, a customer who used you, what their experience was, and get a quote from them as well. So all of a sudden, a journalist can just have more than here's a product and here's a feature. Here's a product.
Story.
Here's a challenge that everybody in the industry faces. Here was the challenge this specific company faced. This was the outcome, the result that they saw. And here's the quote by them sharing their use of this product or service. And so, you know, you really have to, you know, start rethinking the types of releases that you do. A lot of people are looking for any milestone in their business. They give a charitable donation, they do a press release, and those don't really do very well. The types of releases I say people should be doing, and the ones that I see that are working consistently, are strategic types of releases. And I always have my best press release. And whenever I've coached a client into doing a survey or study in their industry, they've always received at least 4 articles from one press release. And on average, it's 8 to 14 articles per press release.
Wow.
And, you know, PR firms in the industry don't even guarantee one media pickup with a 1-year campaign, and they might be charging $20,000 to $40,000. And it's like,
oh
yeah. So I've got one press release idea that if most people implement, they will get media pickup. And it just takes a little bit of work, and it sounds daunting to do a survey or study. And once we get past the imposter syndrome, where people feel I'm not big enough or important enough to do a survey or study in my industry, it's literally spending 15 minutes on like SurveyMonkey or Google Forms creating a survey, and then just having a link that you share with an audience. And the next thing I get on pushback is, well, I don't have an audience. And you don't need one. There are small and independent trade associations in every industry. Usually their members are 750 to 3,500 members. And these are ripe for contacting and saying, hey, I'm doing a survey. I'd love for you to send it out to your members. And in exchange for that, I'll mention you in a press release I'll be issuing over the wire. So all right. It becomes a win-win for them. The small and independent trade associations get almost zero media attention. And so they see it as a real big positive win for them. And so they'll gladly do it. Most of them will send it out through email to their list. Some will also send it through social media as well, or either one, you know. And I've had a couple smart trade associations push back and say, hey, can we co-brand the survey? And I don't see a downside to that. It just adds a little bit more legitimacy of your alignment. But they're also a lot easier to work with than the large trade associations, which generally don't like to cooperate with others.
Because they're too big.
They're too big.
And because for the big guys.
They get media anytime they need.
They don't need to worry about it. They don't need the small ones. Right.
Right. Right. So,
I see.
And you look at the questions. I like 4 questions on each page with 4 pages, total of 16. So if someone gives up halfway, you've got 50% of their responses collected. Mm-hmm. I like asking really timely questions, ones that if you asked in 6 months, you would probably get completely different responses. And you look at your industry, what's going on with it, and pick some questions. Like if you were at a conference or a trade show, what are the things you would ask colleagues in your industry? Like, hey, have you noticed that everybody's beginning to slow pay and, you know, net 30 is turning into net 90? And it's like, that could be, you know, a cash crunch happening in your industry. You can ask questions like, hey, are you having hiring challenges? Are they, you know, not able to hire enough people, or you have too many people and you're considering layoffs, or you have people that are working remotely that don't want to come back into the office. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these are all timely questions coming out of a pandemic that are really going to make really unique answers. And so I then say, well, we're, you know, looking at all the questions that you asked, and feel free to put wild questions on the last page, because if they don't fill it out, then you know, you still got 75% of the responses. But often the wild questions can really turn into something that's really interesting. And you can actually have an open field where you just ask a question. One of ours was, what's the strangest thing a customer left in their car while being repaired? And we sent that to independent auto repair shops. And none of it was statistically relevant because every response was unique. But it was the one that went viral. We got lots of media pickup because people really love these unusual anecdotes and stories. So feel free to be creative and spend a little quality time coming up with the questions. And once you've got the responses, you're going to analyze them. And SurveyMonkey makes it very easy to look at the analysis. And you're going to figure out what are the two or three questions I should focus my press release on. You certainly don't want to focus the press release on all 16 questions, but you could build out a page on your website dedicated to that survey where you put all the responses there and put that in the press release. So a journalist who's looking for a different angle can click through there and say, oh, I think that, you know, question number five that they didn't talk about in the press release is really relevant for me and what I'm thinking about right now. And you're going to put the two or three aha moments in the press release. You're going to put your analysis of why you felt that the numbers skewed a particular way and a great quote by you. You're the expert now because this is your survey,
right?
And you're putting yourself out there. And that always works. And it's one of, you know, it sounds like a lot of work, but it doesn't have to be. It's pretty straightforward and there's lots of shortcuts along the way. But I have one client that does about 30 to 40 surveys a year. And they often get between 8 and 14 articles every time they do it. They cover lots of little verticals, industry verticals, and they have sections on their websites dedicated to each. So they send these out and then they get links back to that vertical that's specific to that industry. And they also get links back to their website, as well as they get traffic from people who are just really interested in what they're collecting. And they were the ones that initially gave me this idea. And I'm like, I wonder if this could work for other people in other markets. And it does. And it's, you know, you could replicate it. And like I said, you can sometimes even take the same questionnaire and just revise it annually and update it a little bit. And then, you know, get a different take on what's going on right now in your industry.
And that's just amazing, because how that you're communicating that to the world in a very unique and different way. I think one of the things is, for me personally, is when you start looking at, you know, doing ads or different functions on all the different softwares, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever it is, and they have all the same type stuff. It looks daunting to me because it's like, you know, you click on it, you don't know where to go, you don't know if you're phrasing it the right way. And you're right, it does come up in your mind. Most businesses in the United States are small businesses, it's not the big guys. And people forget that. And you just like, don't worry about it. You'll be okay. One of the things I did in my last job, I was an engineer in the medical field for many years. And this one manager, very nice manager, but I knew he wasn't looking at my review. Nobody looked at my review. Nobody does. So I was typing up something. I don't remember what part it was, but like, oh yeah, I'm doing this. And then I put in like a little parenthesis going, by the way, I know you're not having a clue what I'm talking about. You're not even reading this. So I went into my boss and he did that. He didn't even say anything about that. It means he didn't read any of it. And I knew he didn't read any of it. He just maybe did a couple things, clicked a couple things, said, yeah, he's a great guy, whatever. I'll give him this kind of raise and that's the end of it. I'm like, and I did it the year after and he didn't say anything. I changed it. I think I made a joke in there like, you know, I don't like your car or something stupid. But it is interesting to see, because people definitely want to hear your story. I mean, the stories are different enough where, you know, how did you get to what? That's why I always ask the question, what were those serendipities, accidents, and coincidences? Because those things are very unique to you and how you get there. I mean, I've told people, it's like, wait, you're an engineer, you're a musician, and you have a philosophy. Where did that come from? I was like, I don't know. But, you know, but you don't know until you share these little tidbits with people. And as I'm talking and doing more seminars and trainings, people are going, "What? Well, could you go back on your background? What? You worked in computerized tomography? And what's an X-ray tube?" So I'm starting to bring these things into my lectures. And I'm also starting to play music with them because, to your point, bring your passion with you. Whatever that passion is, I'll bring my guitars. I have a portable piano. It's like, you know, 20 pounds now. You can carry it with you. People don't know the difference between a grand piano and a rec, but they go, oh, music. Oh, guitar. Oh, he's talking about that. And you find out people aren't so different. And then you start talking to people like, wow, I always wanted to do this. I'm like, well, what's stopping you? Well, you. It's like, but you've got this. I have a friend of mine now. He has a juice company here. I'm going to be talking to him later today. And he's got a story. It's a wonderful story. And he's like, well, I think the story, hey, it's okay. Everybody's talked about it. And you're right. You hit it right in the head. We think that our story doesn't mean anything. And if it's coming from the gut, their inner knowing, and just from the heart, and when you talk about it, people feel it. People feel it. And if it's a good written word, and that's what your expertise and your team's expertise is, to get that out there. If you, he's got a whole price thing on his website, go to it. It's right up front. It's not like it's going, you know, one of those things like, you know, here's this brand new carpet. You got to call me about the price, or it's $999.99. He's got all his prices. He's got all his packages. And that's one of the things I loved about it, is because I don't want to sit there and get a sales pitch. Tell me what you offer. Tell me where options are. And you're like, oh, if you don't do this, try this. And then here's an offer if you do these two things. That's why I like it. And so why do some of these things, I know you talked about a little bit about it, you touched it a little bit. Why do they fail?
I think that they fail because people often approach the press release with the idea already, and it's usually not a great idea. I think that a lot of people look at other press releases that are out there and just figure, this is similar to that. This is my product launch. This is my new hire. This is, you know, my, you know, charitable giving that the company has done. And it's going to look just like other types of press releases that are out there. And I think that, a bigger thing to do is like, write a press release that looks like nothing out there. Feel uncomfortable when you send it. Should I be sending this? This is not like other releases that I'm seeing out there. And often those are the ones that are going to do extremely well, because it is different. And a journalist who's looking for a different story, you know, that's going to really resonate with them. And so, you know, take risk. You know, being contrarian works really well. So many people practice what someone coined called newsjacking, when there's a trend in the industry. And like, it seems like one that's been going on for a little over a year now is electric cars and how they're a savior and everything is great and rosy with electric cars. But if you're the one contrarian raising your head and saying, hey, we shouldn't embrace them so fast because, you know, mining the minerals has its own environmental hazards, not to mention labor issues. We don't know what we're going to do with them at the end of their life with all these batteries. And, you know, also when these things catch fire, fire departments don't know how to, you know, cut them
it's
out.
Toxic. Or,
yes. Yeah. And so they'll burn for hours. And so maybe we should sit back and, you know, hit pause a little bit until we've solved some of this before moving forward. That's a way to be rational. No one's going to say that guy is a crazy contrarian. But what happens is, a journalist like to be fair and balanced. So every time they do an article that mentions electric cars, they often only include one side of it, and that's the pro electric car side. And if you're the only person raising your hand saying, no, not so fast, here's a contrarian viewpoint, you could be plugged into every article on that subject, because journalists are wanting to cover both sides of an issue, or they should be. You know,
sometimes they
get criticized for not doing that. But if you are that person raising your hand, you do stand the likelihood of getting much more media coverage than one more person joining the conversation with the same voice.
The bandwagon.
Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because we're slaves to the technology if you choose to. And I'm not talking about just the electric cars, but in general, this type of stuff we're doing, the Zoom stuff, this is great, but you got to have human contact. You've got to, I mean, that's one of the things I think after what happened in the world is we found we need human contact. We need people. And the things that I'm doing with the seminars, people want to be talked to. People want to be, give a hug, give a handshake, talk to them face to face. But you're right. It's, you know, slow down. Don't be in such a rush. At my degree, I have BSWT. It's electronics engineering. And I used to breadboard. I'm an old guy. We used to breadboard radios. You know, local stations, AM stations. We put LEDs together, little switches with little gates and all this other junk. I'm not going to get the audience bored with my nerdism. And you'd set up, the lights go on and off like this. And people going, wow, this is so new. I'm like, well, LEDs have been around for a long, long time. And what's interesting is, you know, the old statement, the more things change, the more they stay the same. So when I tell somebody, nothing's changed in the electronics industry. So yes, it has. So what's happened? It got faster. It's not what I'm talking about. Well, what are you talking about? The components. Still a microprocessor. There's still AND gates, all these different gates, all this stuff. but it's micro. So they're tall, they're really tiny. So you could put them in, as opposed to me, I used to go in the medical field. I was an engineer fixing the equipment for many years before I went into the x-ray tube side. And I used to pop those things out and I was a horrible solderer. But I could go to, I'm now really aging myself here, ready? Went to go to Radio Shack and got a chip. You can't do that anymore. I used to chase ones and zeros. You can't do that anymore. But everything, a resistor, a capacitor, all these, they're exactly the same. They're just miniaturized. And the software, yeah, the software's gotten better at writing it. And I hated that class in college. Blech, software writing. I knew a buddy of mine that loved it. I'm like, you have it. You can take it. But the more things change, but you just slow down. Realize that, you know, there's certain things. That's a great point with the electric cars, whether it's that, computers, new clothes, it could be anything, you know, and not be so going with the flow, just kind of going, you know what, this kind of bothers me. And you're absolutely right. The more technology we have, these rare earths, I mean, I was in the x-ray tube business. There's molybdenum, beryllium, and x-ray tubes have been around for a long, several hundred year, or couple hundred years. And those things tend to go away. The materials are not all there. And you're right, in different countries where, unfortunately, the where we're getting in front is not really the best place to be. But yeah, doing those things and making those things aware, just kind of standing out a little bit from everybody else. So how can you get free local media coverage? You were mentioning that in something you wrote. And I looked at that and I'm like, free local media coverage? How can you do that? There's nothing for free.
Right. So when it comes to local media and people call our office and say, oh, I'm only interested in local media, we always tell them, you should get that yourself. You shouldn't pay a service like e-releases or a PR firm. If you think about it, in your local market, there's probably less than 12 people who could write about you. You know, probably one person at your local newspaper. If you're lucky enough to have a business magazine or business newspaper, you know, there's someone who covers your industry there. Find out who it is and ask for their email address. They are members of the media. They are, you know, reachable. They should be willing to give you their email address. They shouldn't be hiding. It's not like asking a celebrity for their email address. Right. It is a member of the media, member of the community. And if they ask, you know, just say, hey, I'd like to send a pitch to them. And I would like that. And they'll, I've never had anybody not give it to you, except for there was one first grouchy person who had a problem with one of my clients, and I just coached him through, you know, there's another guy there, let's try him instead. So, and what you're going to do, instead of writing a press release and sending it to them, you're just going to write a pitch, which might be 3 to 5 sentences of what you feel is a really cool article idea and how your company would be a really good example for that. And, you know, if you learned anything, writing a really great quote and including that as part of it can go a long ways, because if you have an amazing quote, they can visualize the article from there and put that together. And then, you know, once you've got this Rolodex of 12 people, and it can include radio and TV as well, there's programs that sometimes spotlight and have conversations with businesses. Maybe there's a radio program that comes on the weekend that does, you know, business spotlights and occasionally covers your industry. Just find out who the producer or booker of that segment is and ask for their email address and say, I'd like to pitch them an idea. And, you know, reach out to these people, you know, every other month, quarterly. It doesn't have to be daunting. And, you know, like I said, with a Rolodex of 12 people and pretty similar pitch to all of them, it's something you should be able to knock out really quickly. And what you'll find is you may not get a lot of pickup your first year. Maybe you'll get an article or two out of it. But the second year, I guarantee you, you're going to get at least 3 or 4 articles out of this. And I suspect that after a while, you will start to get contacted by them, even when you're not doing a pitch. They'll be like, I'm working on a story and I was looking for a local business to plug in and you came to mind. Could I get a quote by you or your thoughts on this subject and maybe include you in the article? And so that's the reason that we see the same companies again and again in our local newspapers. It's not like they have a special telephone that you pick up and you call the journalist. It's just they've done the work of establishing a relationship with the journalist so that they're front of mind when it comes to these matters and these ideas that they have.
That's an excellent point. And the audience listening, it's like you're not being a pest. It's not like you're calling every day but you do it enough and you're consistent enough. And that's an interesting way you said that. And it makes total sense. If they really like what you have, and you keep going back to quotes, because there's always something that anybody can say. I say empowering others empowers us. Everybody's got some kind of shtick going on. Put that little thing in. And as long as it comes from the heart, it makes a difference. And it's not like you have to constantly be calling every day or emailing every day. It's too much. But if you do it in a gentle way, I'm doing monthly seminars over at our local health club here, attached to a hospital. And I just say, hey, look, you know, I'd like to try this and see what happens. It's like, okay. And I've been doing it since March. And I've had varied from the 5 people coming to 30 people coming. I didn't really care. I'm like, I'm out there, I'm doing my practicing, I'm coming out, people are encouraged. They go, hey, I want to talk to you about this or that. And I talked to the manager because I haven't heard any responses. She goes, oh, no, we're getting people, they're coming down here or they're sending us email. I really like Phil's philosophy of Ajnoy. He's taking different subjects from the philosophy and talking about it every month. And he brought his music with him. We really like the music, you know, because that was something, because I do a lot of, for my philosophy, I do a lot of praying and meditating several times a day. And when I get in that meditative state, those things come to you. It's like, how, you know, you're relaxed and suddenly stuff, I'm like, I heard this thing going, hey, stupid, play your music. I'm like, you know, you got this gift, but you're not sharing it enough. I'm like, oh, okay. And you're right. Another thing is try it, because let's say you do 12, nobody responds. And to tell me if this, I'm on the right path of this. And I kind of do some alterations again, didn't really work. I do a little, and I'm not doing it like every week, or maybe do it once a month or something. And I do the third or fourth time, suddenly you respond to me. So it's not like we have the gift of gab writing. I do a little bit, not to what you do. That's not my place. That's not my thing. But try it and keep practicing, because it's not always worth the first time, right?
Right. No, it rarely does. And the clients who get huge success the first time, which does happen, they get the most discouraged when the second and third release doesn't do what the first one did. Right. And so, you know, sometimes it could be a little challenging when it happens, you get an initial burst, but because it happened the first time, it will happen again. You just have to completely keep trying, keep being strategic and just being true to yourself and your messaging, and just sort of realize that, being authentic is the most important thing.
That's it. Don't, like I said, my kids said when they were little, don't be fakey. You're not a movie. Oh, movies don't exist. They're not real. Their polished person is just, I don't want a polished person. Something's wrong if it's all polished. And I can see practicing and being able to give your pitch and your presentation or whatever you're doing, but I'm open. Because when I first started, I had no cards and I had a little a music board that I have that I carried with me. But after a while, I got more comfortable with it. And then I got more comfortable because people kept asking me. And the more you're used to it, the more it becomes like, it's like going to school. You know, it's like just more over and over and over. And suddenly you're like, tell me what you're doing. Tell me how this works. And I'm like, da, 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 da. And it's always different a little bit here and there. But one of the things I want to share with the audience, whether it's I'm playing music or whether you're doing a presentation or whether you're doing it live, no one knows you made a mistake. Not a clue. If a note's bad, or if you played it wrong, or if you said something, you said there instead of this, or you didn't include something, no one knows the difference. You're your own critic. And a lot of times we're our worst critic. So I want to ask you, pertaining to that, with it being a critic and everything, and how, because people are doing this obviously to make a living, they want their business to be successful. So how could a company use the media coverage to improve conversions, to get sales? How does that, because people are going to say, okay, I'm paying for Mickey and that's great, but how long to my ROI?
Right. So generally, it's not unusual for clients, especially if they have a product or service, to get customers directly from the article. You know, if you're lucky enough to have a URL that got published in the article, which some places don't, New York Times generally doesn't. I've had one time where we did a survey and included a special page dedicated to the survey, and the New York Times did link to us. So it is possible that exceptions can be made. But people will do a search and find you if they read about you and your story and want to do business with you. What happens when they read an article, unlike an ad, it's like third-party corroboration. It's this social proof. You know, a journalist has written about you. It comes across as like an implied endorsement. There's this credibility, and that authority conveys through, and people generally get a warm feeling and want to do business with you. I've read many, many blog posts and articles about Kickstarter campaigns, and then found myself on that page, you know, backing that person. And it's human nature to want to identify with a human interest story and want to participate and do business with people that we read about. You know, what happens from articles is people don't open a new browser and say, can I get it cheaper on Amazon? Or can I do a search to save $5 somewhere else? They want to do business with this company. And that trust and authority just really, you know, goes through. And, you know, that's one of the things that happens that is so different about PR than advertising is that, you know, there is almost like this goodwill that you're creating, and you can, you know, capitalize on it. Take that same article, share it with your social media, share it in your newsletters, take screenshots, because unfortunately pages and URLs disappear on the internet. So you want to make sure you captured it for posterity, put it on your website, make sure you're putting your press releases and your successes and logos and stuff like that on your website. If you don't have a newsroom section on your website, and I work with a lot of small businesses, and asking for them to create one, a new section on their website is like pulling teeth. You know, most people have a blog, put it on your blog at the very least, you know, create a category called, you know, in your blog news or press releases or something like that, and just post your content there, but get it on your website, preserve it. What you'll find is, you know, you share stuff on with your newsletters and your social media, it goes to your customers. So they're going to get a signal that, hey, we're working with the right company. If we are, you know, have a practice of shopping different companies or vendors every couple of years, we're probably not going to do it this year because we just read this great article, got the warm and fuzzies. We're working with the right person. You know, let's keep it as it is. If you're, you know, sending it to leads who are on, you know, getting your and engaging with your social media, as well as you have a list that goes to the leads, you know, there are always some that came really close to doing business with you and it just didn't happen. But what you'll find is those people are more likely to now, you know, go over and do business with you because there's just enough of a message that it got them over the hump. And they're just like, wow, you know, if this journalist and this news outlet writes about them, then I feel a lot more comfortable, you know, choosing them. And that makes it a lot easier to convert. And it also can work not only online, but offline. I had a local carpet company that just really savaged the market and got like 30 articles written about them in a year. And they put them all together and printed them out, color pictures, and put them in a binder. And they called it their brag book. And every time they went out and gave a quote to a customer, they would show them. We got picked up in Florida Trade Weekly, the local newspaper, New Jersey Magazine. We're recognized nationally, and they started converting 17% more of these leads that they were working just by having this brag book. And that really just goes away to show you that, you know, media, earned media, when you get an article written about you, it is almost like a referral. This authority that you created is something that people recognize and they act upon it.
I think that one of the things with businesses in general, you got to give it time. You mentioned that a little bit earlier. You got to give it time. Sometimes you go down this different road. I started differently on the music side before I got to where I'm at now. I didn't know I was going to be doing this. I didn't even know I was going to do a podcast show. And I'm starting to get people interested. They're contacting me, but I didn't know. How would you know? But you got to, and I'm not saying try isn't just, you know, get a home loan and put yourself into hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. Do different things. See what works. See what doesn't work. Call Mickey. Talk with him. See, like I said, go to his website. It's very upfront. He's got nothing hiding there. Whatever you hear is totally basically what I already read about him. He's pretty upfront with this stuff. He's got a lot of knowledge. And if there's something that you're looking for to push your business a little bit further, and one thing I noticed is that I understand it's an investment and you're spending the money and you might not be having a lot of ROI right now, but what's that old saying? You got to spend money to make money, but it's reasonable money. It's not like you're asking for $40,000. You know, ask it for $40,000 and going, thank you, Mickey, have a good day. But it's try it out. You know, I like, you know, if something tells me that's my, and there's a lot of things that I'm not an expert on. And if I say, hey, you know what, maybe this might be, let's see if it works. I did something, I'm not going to name what it was, because people might say that we're successful with it. I tried it. It was a total scam. It was as in, it made you think people were going to look, but nobody's really looking. And yeah, I spent a couple grand finding out this hard lesson. And the hard lesson was, if I didn't know, if I didn't go through there, and there was all these statistics and graphs, and I'm a dorky engineer, so I'm looking at it, I'm like, this is a bunch of horse hockey. This is made up. And my logical mind, and I'm thinking, okay, no, this doesn't exist. There's no way. Because I, as an engineer, I supported a medical device, an x-ray tube, but I worked in the sales and marketing department. So I learned little things just by listening and talking to people. But I'm like, no. They're making a ton of money doing this, but it's making you feel like you're doing something good, but you're getting nothing but just throwing money to the wind. And when you get somebody like Mickey that has an expertise and he's reasonably priced, it says, hey, you know, let's do this. Here's some offers. Let's see how this goes. And they can talk to you. I think it's definitely worth it, because not only, let's say it hits a little bit, you learn something about yourself that makes you a better writer, you a better talker, you a better pitcher, a better presenter. Because when you're dealing with people, and that's why I love this show, because it makes me more aware of the things that I don't know. And there's a lot of stuff I don't know. And I, you know, when I try to figure it out, like I said, it becomes daunting. But when you're doing things, if you want to do the local press thing, I think that's a great idea. There's, I didn't even think about that the way you said it. There's tons of we get local magazines all the time. I was like, how did that person get in there? And I'm thinking, well, like you said, just contact them. Worst case is they don't contact you, or they say, I'm sorry, I'm not interested. Hey, they responded, try somebody else. But there's those little magazines, you know, like their life magazine for the town or whatever. And there's entertainment magazines. There's all sorts of different, there's tons of them. If you want to kind of do a trial balloon on that. And then when things start going, then they can use a company like yourself to make it blow up, because then you're getting a more seasoned person. Before we go, well, I want to thank you very much, of course, for being on the show. It's been a great conversation. I love this. Never knew anything about this industry. I love how you consciously communicate to the world through press releases. Is there anything you could say as an inspirational aphorism, something that you can say to the audience that's positive before we end the show, that then go, oh, I didn't think about that?
I think that what I can speak to is there's a lot of people who have an imposter syndrome when it comes to PR. I think a lot of people feel they're too small or they don't matter, and that the media is only looking for the big, giant, well-funded companies. But you got to realize journalists don't like putting the spotlight on someone that can afford to advertise. They would much rather take their advertising dollars, and they will cover the big companies, but they love to be seen as curators and get the pats on the back when they profile someone that no one else has heard of. And they love to make introductions between their audience and new businesses. And so being small and unknown is a huge advantage when it comes to PR. It is not a disadvantage. And I think that that's one of the, you know, biggest things that I want people to understand and sort of take away.
Thank you. That's an excellent way to do it. And Mickey, again, thank you very much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And remember, as I always say to my audience, remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts. That's what this conversation was all about, creative thoughts, and not the thoughts you are thinking, the stuff that going, I'm not good, I'm not able to do this, I'm not popular enough. That is what is called conscious communication. Focus on the things that are your thinking thoughts, not the thoughts you're seeing, thinking. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.